Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha. Welcome to Talking Pictures. Happy Aloha Friday. It is September 23rd, and this is going to be a really cool, interesting, fun, and not fun. I'm saying fun because it's going to be informative. This is really an important documentary. It's titled Vaxxed. You can see the website vaxxed.com. It's available on DVD. You can rent it on Vimeo. And this is a documentary that was pulled from Tribeca. And it was one of the most controversial documentaries of 2016. Today we're going to be talking with one of the producers, who's a feature film producer and documentary filmmaker, Ms. Rhonda Joy Glickman. She's part of the producing team, and this film was invited to Tribeca and then excused from the lineup. So before we get more into that, we'll wait until we bring her on, but my initial reaction to this film was... first of all, shock. Second of all, I had only seen headlines of the controversy. I never went too far into it. And I think that I implore people to, after this episode, Google it. And a bunch of stuff shows up. Robert De Niro, Vaxxed. I'll bring in our guest in one moment. I see that she's called in. When you Google De Niro, Vaxxed, a number of things will come up, both sides of the aisle. So before I introduce Rhonda Joy, I just wanted to say that today what we discuss, we never censor on this show, but the opinions of the guests are that of the guests. The opinions of myself represent the show and my team. And with that, good morning to you and happy Aloha Friday, Rhonda.
Aloha, Paul Booth.
Rhonda Joy, sorry. I have two phone numbers showing up on the call board. Are you coming through on the 516 or are you coming through on the 323?
I'm coming through on 657-383-0373.
Oh, okay. That's weird because I have you, but someone else is calling in and I don't know who the heck it is, so I'm not bringing them in. Okay, so let's get to it. I had mentioned about this being one of the top controversial films of 2016, it being selected for Tribeca and then pulled. And I have our list here of what we discuss. And I always like to leave it up to the guest of
Paul,
where.
Paul, how's the audio doing? Is it okay? I'm on speaker. Is that good for you?
Oh, it's working on my end if it works for you.
Okay. Check. 1, 2, 3.
Yes, other than the airplane that flew by for no reason, that all morning there's been no airplanes, but of course the second we rolled one had to fly by, everything's good.
The quintessential waiting on sound.
Yes, exactly. Nothing like it. Nothing that we as filmmakers, I guess, dislike but also love at the same time. So what can we do?
So how would you like to jump in here? I heard your introduction referring to Vaxxed and its controversial journey in an effort to premiere at a premier film festival, namely Tribeca, which is such a great festival. And I've had the privilege of having films there before. When Vaxxed was first invited to participate, the De Niro's had began, as along with the staff of Tribeca, to put together a really comprehensive panel discussion to follow the film, inclusive of scientists and congressmen and filmmakers as well. And we were absolutely shocked to have been, you know, as you use the term, pulled from the festival. Or another nice political term we integrated was deselected.
I love that, because that's not usually the official deselection of Tribeca Film Festival. Sorry, I'm not making light of anything here, but I just had to with that one.
No, it actually turned out to be an honor in many regards. I really appreciate Mr. De Niro's integrity in terms of the fact that the initial draw towards the film, the way a moth goes to light, was simply curiosity. There's a dialogue that needed to be ignited, and as a result of being deselected, of course, this isn't fresh news now. However, it's still relevant, because personally for myself, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a storyteller, and I have not historically worked on hot-button political documentaries. My documentary work tends to be more focused on artists, musicians. I think, you know, my last documentary was about Herman Leonard, the jazz photographer. And so for me, the investigatory process of making a documentary film, by definition, allows you to really immerse in a subject. And I was a co-producer on Vaxxed. By no means was I the main producer. I was the main wingwoman to the main producer, Del Bigtree. And the way that I participated was as a filmmaker. So it was very surprising to have Tribeca or the beat on the street be questioning the credibility or authenticity of the actual filmmaking process, because I was witness to a good deal of it, and it was most certainly an authentic investigation.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, you mentioning not doing something that's controversial or this kind of not being a first, but the way this went, and I wanted to just really quickly go back to a point about Robert De Niro, and this will probably serve well for our state of journalism. I have to be honest that as the film unfolded, and I'm not, this isn't spoiling anything, because like I said, this is all, you Google it and it comes up. My understanding and the way the media presented it was that De Niro pulled it for having some kind of disagreement and having a child with autism. I did not learn until these articles in the film that he was behind it. So that just goes to show you, like you were saying, the state of media, the way I saw a headline and thought, wow, De Niro censoring, I just don't see him getting this old and grumpy. I just don't see him. All of a sudden, he's went from being humble and quiet to being, he's going to have the final say. So it's a really interesting thing, the way there was some, I guess we could use Wizard of Oz as a metaphor, people behind the curtain that controlled the situation. I mean,
let me jump in on one word in particular that you used at the top, which was the word journalism. I think it is thematically ubiquitous right now, the extent to which the Fourth Estate has been reduced to something that we now call media. Journalism and reporting, from my understanding of it and from my understanding of what fundamentally constitutes a democracy is that the legislative, executive, and judicial branches of government, the fourth pillar is the fourth estate, which is journalism. And I feel that the current state of affairs is one where media has reduced reporting to pundits, as opposed to really making the efforts and doing the due diligence to reflect the voice of the people. And to speak, not specifically to, again, Mr. De Niro's position, which I feel was a very humanistic position, I'm speaking for myself. The aspect of Vaxxed that attracted me to the story, for me, started 10 years ago because one of my best girlfriends has 6 children. And in the process of, you know, being her friend as she gave birth to each child and raised each child, the vaccine schedule had shifted so radically between child number 3 and number 4.
Ronald Dwyer, you just broke up for about 5 seconds, so if you wouldn't mind repeating that last part.
Oh, I said that how I came to be involved with Vax was simply as a human being from a very humanist perspective. One of my best girlfriends has 5 children. Well, actually, she has 6 children, but one of them is much older. But the vaccine schedule had changed so radically between child number 3 and child number 4, and it really began a whole line of questioning that I became participatory in for multiple reasons. One, because of the fact that I had several friends who had kids and had assumed, or they had come to a place in their own heart where they had assumed perhaps that had come about from their kids being born at a later, you know, when they were older mothers giving birth to children. And in the investigation, the word vaccine just kept coming up. This led me to become aware of Dr. Andy Wakefield. Again, this was about 10 years ago. In complement to that, I was a very dear friend and a collaborator of Del Bigtree, the main producer on Vaxxed. And Del and I had originally work together collaborating on a feature film, and I certainly know him to be an artist and a storyteller and as well a journalist, because he was a producer on the daytime talk show The Doctors for, I think it's about 7 years, 6 or 7 years. And we would have conversations about the fact that he would get requests to do stories covering mothers of vaccine-injured children, and management would never permit the stories to be shown and to participate. So this caused a lot of questioning as to whether there was a link between vaccines and autism, but I just want to state from my personal perspective that I do not know the facts of the science, but I do know science is about asking questions. So as a citizen who happens to be a filmmaker, who happens to be a storyteller, I really can't understand why these questions are not being asked. And once I had met a lot of the mothers of these children, there was no turning back for me, because it's impossible to unknow what you know. And I'm just really, really proud of Del and Andy and Polly, who are out there doing tireless publicity and address this subject all day long, every day. I am by no means am I an anti-vaxxer. I am pro-safe vaccine, and I am pro-choice in terms of parents having the choice as to what they inject in their children. So that's the round picture for me as to how I come to be involved, why I'm passionate about it, and to circle that back to your point about Mr. De Niro, it's my understanding that he had never asked for any particular film to be programmed in the history of Tribeca, that this particular film was of personal interest to him, and yes, for personal reasons. And it was a real honor that he spoke with great dignity and encouragement for people, you know, for the public to get out to see Vaxxed and for them to make their own minds up. So in the end, it ended up, I think, helping the film being deselected. But it's been a very disconcerting journey indeed.
Now, did, just for the filmmakers and film lovers, and again, our show, as you know, but new listeners, we stand by people, our people, and especially Mr. De Niro, who I've heard is one of the shyest men on earth, is just what is it like as a filmmaker for your work and something you've been a part of to have just the respect and just to have Robert De Niro discussing your film? I mean, I know you had mentioned it was a nice honor that he had selected, but to have it be something that he's giving his time and attention to, not just a statement or a secretary, as a filmmaker, what does that feel like?
Well, it's difficult for me at times to separate myself as a filmmaker or as a producer from myself as a person, because in many ways those two things are synonymous to me in that I share the same code of ethics on the human side and on the filmmaker side. But strictly from the standpoint of being an artist, I first met Robert De Niro on the set of, I guess it would have been Jackie Brown, and I met him again on the set of Dusk Till Dawn, which he wasn't in Dusk Till Dawn, but he was just visiting. And, you know, there's been a handful of occasions where I've had the privilege of observing him in his craft, and he's Robert De Niro. What more can you say? I mean, he's his curiosity and his hunger for an understanding of humanity is what makes him the actor that he is. And I think that as a filmmaker, there's a part of me that was certainly, and I can speak for the whole filmmaking team on this one, there's a part of us that was, of course, tickled pink by his willingness to speak for it. But the truth of the matter is I was very sad because of what motivated it, and the fact that he and his wife, Grace, have had to go through what they've had to go through with their son, who is a beautiful young man, but it's, you know, I have a lot of pathos for anybody who believes that their child is vaccine injured and has had to live day in, day out as a parent with that. So I hope that answers, but it's hard for me to distinguish Robert De Niro, the man, from the actor in a unusual context such as this. It's, we're all doing this as human beings, first and foremost.
Oh, no, of course. And that's always how it should be. I think that it's I think well, first of all, thank you for such a great answer, and the fact that you've gotten to be around him or see him work is another fantastic privilege as a human artist, however you mention. As we were discussing the state of journalism, this is something that on my side of things, I've almost kind of turned myself off to it, even though I call myself a film journalism or film journalist. And that's simply because, like you know, and for our new listeners, we don't have an agenda. We don't have a corporate building tower that sits above the studio and I have to go and answer to them every Friday, or they have to tell me what Ron or Joy can say and what I can ask. And so this is a very interesting time where there's also becoming this division of the journalists who have to just go at their own and literally hopefully become a trusted source based on the way you and I have had conversations and emails, and my integrity has shown you that I'm a source that you can speak with, versus just me automatically saying, well, I work for ABC. Well, sometimes I'm realizing now that if a journalist says they work for a certain company, they could be the nicest guy in the world, and that takes away their credibility. So since
I really want to thank you for that, Paul, because the truth of the matter is, personally, as a producer, I was not originally going to be publicly accredited for my work on Vaxxed by way of my own choice. To be perfectly honest with you, I have friends who are very accomplished media executives, some might even classify as moguls, and they emphatically warned me that my reputation as a documentarian could be jeopardized by allowing my name to be a part of the billing block of Vaxxed. And I have to be honest, it is a very trying profession being an independent producer, and I work very hard and in a very disciplined fashion to get the films that I make made, and I was scared about that. I was very clear, however, that when the film was deselected from Tribeca was actually the point at which I agreed and, in fact, took pride in, quote-unquote, putting my name on the film alongside the other brave filmmakers who are far more brave than I, because, as I said, I was very concerned about protecting my filmmaking passport. And interestingly enough, to what you speak, in the same way somebody who works for a network has to deal with the politics and particularly, I want to emphasize the sponsorship politics of the media outlet. I sat here in my studio realizing that even though I am a true independent filmmaker, I was starting to feel those pressures myself. And one of the reasons I was not originally going to put my name on the film along with Del Bigtree was because I knew Tribeca had accepted it, and I thought, wow, we are going to be in great hands, particularly with the De Niro's taking such a strong stand, and I really felt the film would be in good hands. When it was deselected, accused of not being legitimate filmmaking or legitimate documentary filmmaking, that was a point at which I figured, because I have made so many art house films, festival films, I figured by way of including myself in the lineup, perhaps it would at the very least telegraph to other festival directors and other filmmakers that, hey, yeah, there's some legitimate, hardworking filmmakers involved here. It is not by any means just, you know, coming together through the work of a mad doctor. I mean, Dr. Andy Wakefield is a brilliant man who has invested all day long, every day, to at least bringing these questions to the foreground. And bottom line being that whether we are employed by bigger corporate entities or not, we're all feeling it. And I don't think I ever really stopped early on in my career to really think of whether documentary filmmaking classifies as journalism. I mean, it clearly does. I just never really got tied up in the semantics of it until recently, when I really have been living an experience which proves the complexity of this carbohydrate at this point.
Well, yes, and of course, so many documentaries in the last few years have been veteran PTSD or GMOs or, and as far as this goes, now this is on a published blog, which I can say, of course, any joke, I mean, I can go on the internet tomorrow and say that I had dinner with Al Pacino, but when you're talking about De Niro and you're talking about congressmen, lawyers, etc., you would receive a cease and desist letter within about 10 seconds. To say kind of what this De Niro situation thing, it said that he had met with Florida Congressman Bill Posey, and it even got to the point where De Niro was willing to say, okay, not only am I going to show the film, but I'm going to introduce it and I'm going to be on stage with it. Then from out of the shadows, De Niro comes and says they're canceling Vax. Now, in the state of journalism, this also leaks into the state of power. And I know we could do a completely separate podcast on power and government and officials, but this is a key time, and this can lead us into our state of indie film, where, you know, A, there was a day where indie films were maybe not seen by Robert De Niro. They certainly weren't shown in a festival that Robert De Niro created. You get that. I saw a great independent film the other night that had Morgan Freeman, and it made me think, well, is this a low-budget Morgan Freeman movie, or is this an indie that Morgan Freeman liked the script? So right here, even though De Niro is not in Vax and all that stuff, it happened later, but there's you know, these congressmen, and to have a control over indie film, Ronna Joy, since you've been, since you were at a time when indie film proved that indie film could run with the studios, being at a time of Full Tilt Boogie, and you mentioned Jackie Brown, so that obviously knows, you know, Mr. Tarantino's team. I don't like to say who people know or don't know. I let the guests do that. So being at a time where indie film all of a sudden was making as much, if not more, than blockbusters at the time, as far as this goes, how do you feel about the fact that indie film is getting congressmen involved? And we can start this with a state of indie film conversation, wherever you would like to begin or go with it.
Well, I think that, I mean, that's a lot of landscape you just covered. I will say that as far as the involvement of congressmen, I do think that obviously the subject of any film when you're making a documentary, the list of subjects or potential people who could be interviewed that relate to the topic are obviously directly relevant to the subject itself. So in the case of our film, the fact that this had been brought to Congress, the fact that a whistleblower had not yet been subpoenaed was a matter of, you know, very significant seriousness. In fact, the filmmakers decided to rush the completion and release of Vaxxed in order to get the story told with the hopes of inspiring the subpoena for that to come about. So a lot of our initial launch was focused on bringing further attention to Congress. So again, in this case, you would have to involve clips and quotes of congressmen in order to get the audience to make the connection between the issue at hand and reaching out and communicating with the government, the powers, you know, the people who make legislation. Specifically, Senate Bill 277, which is the mandatory vaccine Senate bill that went into effect here in California on July 1st. There was also a great deal of effort to get this film out before that Senate bill passed. So as all that relates to independent film, I think that at different points in history, you know, I just thought back to, of course, Barbara Kopple's Harlan County film or Michael Moore's films, obviously, which deal right with the heart of the matter in real time with an issue that is going on. I don't know. I think that's always just been the nature of documentary. Does that answer?
Oh, well, yeah, no, I mean, that gives a good look at it, but also with the way we had discussed that you were, you know, the state of indie film being how it's changed with the way you were at, I guess there's no other word, but ground zero. I mean, you were...
Oh, interesting segue. I just want to point out, because we have spoken so much about Mr. De Niro and about Tribeca and indie film, I just want to, you know, remind us here in this conversation that Tribeca actually was formed in response to rebuilding, you know, Manhattan by post 9/11. And
yes,
so interesting that you should go to Ground Zero. I think that we are metaphorically dealing with, you know, a spectrum of Ground Zeros out there as far as that relates to the state of independent film. Perhaps are you touching into something you and I had addressed in our pregame conversation regarding what motivates me personally to be an independent?
Well, that, but also the way we had discussed that, how indie film had that huge boom that you were around and part of.
Oh, well, I mean, ultimately, in terms of, you know, the shifts here in the past couple of decades, I think that the caliber of indie filmmaking, certainly in the late 90s and mid 90s, late 90s, early 2000s was unilaterally quite a higher level of production value, quite frankly, because at that point in time and before the advent and introduction of the accessible digital camera, really all boots on the ground had to come into the profession of filmmaking by way of working from the bottom up, seeking out mentorship. So it wasn't as much indie versus studio as much as it was indie historically tended to refer to a lower budget range than a studio film, but we used to be held to the criteria of having to meet the muster of excellence in every department. When the digital cameras came in and it literally became possible for anyone to go buy a camera at Best Buy and just start making a movie, not that some terrific films haven't come out of that very down and dirty guerrilla approach, but I do believe that what happened and has continued exponentially to happen is a saturation of the marketplace where it's all a reflection of math. The word exponential is so relevant because I actually heard Dr. Phil referring to this when he was on Fallon or something. I just stumbled across a little excerpt, and you know, he was discussing how when he was younger there were only three television channels, and now we have, you know, thousands. So all of the content that needs to be filling all these avenues, it's just a mathematical demand that's so exponential. And when you add to that any person, due to the globalization as a result of the internet, can start, for example, their own YouTube channel, what happens is there's just so much noise out there, so much static, so much saturation. And I think originally, you know, I approached filmmaking as an independent film because I am by nature a maker more so than I am a waiter. I don't mean waiter as in food service, right, although I was once a waiter and I loved waiting tables. But what I'm saying is producers who approach filmmaking by way of going out to corporate entities or studios and putting forth packages and looking and seeking for approval in entities outside of themselves, that just seemed to be an incredibly slow boat to who knows where. For me, when I was starting out, and I much preferred to be a crew member working from the factory floor up, and then went into, you know, making my films independently more than anything because I wanted to be making films. But the criteria and the caliber of crew members were still held to very high test, high bar back then. Today, I'm still up to it, although I am also happy to disclose that as of a couple of years ago, I've also moved into television, just because I think there's such great things happening in television in terms of the in-depth narratives and the character development and just how juicy it is to tell a story over a longer time period than a 90-minute typical theatrical bracket. I'm very attracted and immersed in development with shows that follow the House of Cards business model, and excited about that. I kind of think of them as the modern-day novel. And since I grew up in a literary household with a lot of books and a lot of reading and having my imagination, really fortified and stimulated by the process of reading, I do feel a similar effect to that when I watch a long-form narrative that goes deep into relationships and dynamics and things like that. And, you know, so for some of those ventures, I anticipate partnership with larger entities, with Amazon in particular, and potentially Netflix. And, you know, taking it a day at a time, sir.
Well, that's the only way to fly. And for as far as the state of indie, there is no doubt television. I mean, House of Cards, I think, set a new precedent. We've done episodes about House of Cards episodes. I think that kind of just in the way the West Wing kind of took people by storm. But
oh, I love that show.
Yeah, I mean, and the technology wasn't there for everyone to say, okay, now I'm going to jump online. And the fact I never thought in a million years, a decade ago, when Netflix came out, that they would ever be making their own shows or movies. So that's a whole nother route to see now that we're in a situation where the goal is to get your film on iTunes and not to get your, well, I mean, of course, every filmmaker would love something in a theater, but to get your, humongous theatrical release is 20 cities instead of 5. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. So to have been a part of producing a documentary that rises above, like you said, the saturation, the blessing of too much content is that we've gotten to meet so many wonderful guests. You and I would not know each other if it wasn't for Spacious Sky. Our friend, Mr. Jonah, we have worked on so many films together, has PR rep and show, that it's the equal blessing of with the saturation comes those incredible amounts of diamonds in the rough. And
well, abundance, there's certainly something to be said for abundance. And I do want to say, I hope I didn't in any way... I didn't mean to sound elitist with regards to, you know, referring to this market saturation. It's just something which personally as an artist I've taken on. I've taken it on in a very serious but playful way. I think that this has been definitely for me one of the hardest years of grief in conjunction with artistry. To lose David Bowie and Prince and just so many other incredible artists in the course of 1 year, while the political mayhem is going on and this incredibly heated election cycle and everything that's going on in the world, I think that as an artist, the good news is that all of the abundance on a positive side, it's abundance. On the light side, it's abundance. On the dark side, it can get very noisy and chaotic. I know for me right now, I'm just really listening. First and foremost, as a musician, I want to say, because it's really the first way in which I express myself articulately, you know, I don't know that I was that articulate as a musician, but what I mean is singing and playing piano and dancing and moving and connecting and things that are joyous. And so for me, even as a filmmaker, music has always been the through line of what keeps me going energetically. And I've always really loved working with the composers and putting together the soundtracks of my feature films. And now, on the heels of Vaxxed, I just wanted to say I have the privilege to be working on a music documentary that is, well, it's the privilege of a lifetime, and I can't announce what it is, but suffice it to say it connects to a rock goddess and a musician who I have considered a role model and somebody who I've looked up to most of my life. So on the heels of working on a documentary that involved Big Pharma, I am now going to spend this next couple of years immersed in feature filmmaking, original fiction, and a couple of brilliant music docs that are just jazzing me to no end. So wherever it's all heading, I'm just doing my best to do good work and to, you know, to just honor the craft and tell good stories and also share some good vibes out there.
Well, that's fantastic that you're in a some sense reinventing yourself, and to it's a nice swap, yin yang, whatever anyone calls it, to go from what is one of the most important things right now, which is to discuss, talk about, even challenge Big Pharma, and then the thing that saves us from stuff like Big Pharma is music. So
love and music.
Yes. It's a
love
really,
and music. It's interesting. They say, you know, write what you know. And when I am writing, I do write from my experience, from my heart. And as a producer, I also would put out there, produce what you know to be true in your heart. You know, produce the stories that motivate you. I think in that wonderful phrase, life imitates art, always comes to mind, because what motivates me to be a part of a storytelling team is usually something very deep, personal, spiritual, something that I connect to, that therein lies the loop of energy which actually gives me the stamina and perseverance to just wake up and do what needs to get done on behalf of the film on a daily basis. So, you know, I guess it always comes back to one of our favorite words, Paul, passion.
Yes, passion, the great door opener. And while we're discussing Big Pharma and music, there's a story.
Are those two things combined?
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably a first. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And there's this story that I might have told you before, but I would love to tell the audience, because it shows you the true power of music, especially over Big Pharma. In 2009, when my grandmother was passing from bone cancer. And she was at that stage where she needed morphine every hour. And don't get me wrong, there is times our veterans, car wrecks, obviously bone cancer, we're not going to knock that she was on morphine. But she was just screaming in pain and she wouldn't take her morphine. And this was a woman who thought taking an aspirin was like, meant you're a junkie. And so anyways, long story short, she says to me, do you have that Dave Brubeck CD that you brought over for me? And I said, well, yeah, I have the Brubeck and the Louis Armstrong. And she says to me, can you please put on Take Five? And I said, okay. And I tried to give her morphine. She wouldn't take it. Long story short, I leave the room. She's screaming. Take Five starts. 5 minutes later, I hear no screaming. I actually had thought she passed because she was at that point where it was touch and go. And I come in and she's just sleeping. And the Dave Brubeck CD plays. And an hour later, I hear her yelling for me. I think she's in pain. And she says, can you restart that Dave Brubeck CD?
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah. And
how absolutely how absolutely relevant of a story in terms of the transformative way. It's like music really gets in our cells and transcends and transports. And cool is it that your grandmother wanted to hear Take Five. I just want to give a shout out to the audience really quick and say Paul sent me a little a very, very sweet, enthusiastic email this morning after he had watched Vaxxed, and in the email, Paul wrote to me, is it okay if I quote you?
Oh, yes.
Paul writes, let's go wherever you want. We're a jazz band, and I'll be keeping up, Coltrane. Aloha.
I just loved
getting that, and I have to say that for any of my friends who may happen to be listening to this, some people really get a kick out of that expression. I believe it's Lord Byron, when the expression is, and I digress, because I speak in a way that is often very macroscopic, and some people think that I've lost my train of thought. To any of those people, I always want to say, first of all, not all who wander are lost. And,
I love it.
And I want to say, off of your Coltrane reference, one of the really sweetest, most compassionate, I choose to take it as a compliment, compliment I ever received was from another friend of mine whose name happens to be Paul, also Pablo Behan, who said, he said to me, Rana Joy, you communicate like a jazz musician. And I felt so understood by him in that moment, because the truth is that there is a lot of feeling and spiritual, musical connectivity that I feel in my heart and that I apply as a leader on the factory floor of filmmaking, because I do have to say I like keeping it musical.
Well, yes, and for those of you speaking of, because we love to recommend films. Don Cheadle's Miles Ahead is out in the Redbox now, and libraries, I got it at the library. Don Cheadle, of course, co-wrote, co-produced, directed, and plays Miles Davis. It's about kind of an interesting time in Miles Davis, not your standard that everybody relates to or knows, but that's the beauty of film. And it's the funky kind of Sketches of Spain, Jack Johnson album, Miles. But yeah, with I do want to say, Rana Joy, that you've, with what you're mentioning about speaking in jazz terms, Miles Davis being so famous for Silence, is there has been times when I first met you where your emails would have four words and I'd be like, okay, this person is really trying to say, don't email me again, or they really are busy, or they're just like, and so what you're saying, so now that, you know, we've
wow,
been
I am
more,
seldom, and, seldom accused of being short-winded, but what four words might those have been?
It's the silence, it's the play the note you need to play, and come off the stage. So it's. I liked that you used that analogy, because it suits perfect with the music and the jazz, and all of this really is what people. One of the reasons why I just love this show, I mean, being a filmmaker myself, but why I have found just such a love in this podcast is because I can obviously be windy, but I love the fact that
windy.
I love that.
I'm gonna have to adopt that. Windy.
Yeah.
That's endearing. Well, I do want to acknowledge something.
Yes.
I have done zero publicity connecting to Vaxxed. I have worked deep, deep behind the scenes, near the, you know, at the bridge control with Big Tree and Eric Whitmire, who I really want to give a shout out to. Eric Whitmire was the producer of post-production on Vaxxed, and Eric and I were deep, deep behind the scenes. I don't know if he's done any publicity. I, as I said, have not. And I entrusted you because, Paul, your integrity and your thoroughness is appealing. And I thought, well, I could just go, if I have to go on the record once, which it's not like someone's putting a gun to my head making me go on the record, but I really felt that I wanted an opportunity to say why it was that I participated in Vaxxed is because all of the mothers of these children were telling the same story, and I felt it was important more than anything that those mothers have a voice. As far as the political and the scientific, I certainly find it fascinating and of profound concern. But ultimately where I can be of greatest service is probably answering that call that's coming in, but let me decline it.
Oh, no, feel free.
Sorry, I actually I have a call coming in from Barcelona that I forgot to reschedule.
Oh, no worries, because we're down to about 2 minutes, so anything that you want to say to wrap is fine.
You know, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to participate and to speak about the state of journalism, the state of vaccines, the state of independent film, and for all of that to come back to the simplest thing inside my heart, which is to say, without love and camaraderie and communication and open dialogues about all of these myriad issues, there's just nothing substantive going on. So I really, really appreciate the opportunity to speak about things in an in-depth way. And, you know, I thank you. That's a good wrapping point for me.
You're very welcome, and our team thanks you for returning and the support and for sharing this with us. And we'll
for all four words I put in that email. Maybe that was a little bit of a foreshadowing of the need to talk about the Fourth Estate and the four branches of government and the four pillars, and to tie in your word, Wendy, the four winds, the four questions, the four directions. Shout out to Mike Atala, 444.
I love it.
That was a little inside note, but
no worries.
Gotta throw some jazz in.
Yes, it's all good. You have a fantastic day, and may your call to Barcelona be supremely productive.
Okay. It's late there. I'll get back to them. Okay. Thank you
kindly.
Paul. And thanks.
All right.
Thanks out there to anyone listening. Really appreciate all the people who have come out to see Vaxxed and all of the people who are asking questions out there. That's what it's all about. Asking questions and feeling the love.
Exactly.
All
aloha
right. Peace out, Paul.
Happy Aloha Friday. Peace. And again, we thank Ron and Joy for stopping by. It is Happy Aloha Friday here at Talking Pictures and around the world. For anyone who's from Hawaii, they know that every day should be Aloha Day, but it's always Happy Aloha Friday. We've enjoyed this episode. We have a fantastic week coming up next week. Go to my Facebook page and our Talking Pictures Facebook page. Check out what's coming down the pike, a review of Rainey Kerwin's The Wedding Invitation, a movie talk episode with two fantastic directors, Lee Liu and Quincy Rose. You know what? We have so much goodies next week that you're just going to have to check it out. Talking Pictures Facebook page, my personal page, Paul K. Booth as the host. Thank you, as always, for joining us. And like always, whatever you're going to do today, make sure and watch a good movie. And more importantly, peace to all.